right. Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Red State Revolt. I'm your host, Mark Falk. I am doing double duty today, trying to set up a live stream, which I've done before. It's not my first time. I've been to some live stream rodeos before, but apparently Kate usually does those for me, and she's not here today. So my guest today in studio, and we'll go ahead and start here on the radio, and while we're doing that, if I appear to be awkward and not quite paying attention, it's because I'm going to get a live stream going, and then we'll be live streaming on Mark Falk's page on Facebook as well. But in the meantime, we are here on Red State Revolt. How are you doing? Chris Powell, running for governor. And I want to start, and we'll do this in a minute, and we'll do the hellos, but I've been to several Democratic debates, like three or four of them already, and there's been about 820, I think. But the one the other day that included some of the Republicans and the other Libertarians was the most interesting one I've been to. So take that however you want, but... So how have you been?
Very good, very good. We've been certainly try to put on a good show at any sort of public forum that we go to.
Yeah, no, and that's I would say it's the Libertarians and Connie. You know, I'm and I don't want Connie, if she's out there listening right now, to take this in the wrong way, but Connie is the Democrat who, in about 80% of the issues, is as close to a libertarian in her values as anybody, probably, in either party.
I would say that she's closer, but I don't know that I would go to 80%. That's a little much.
Well, so let's start with this. You have three candidates. Tell me who the other two candidates are, and then I want to talk about within your own party, how do you differ from them? How do you guys differentiate yourselves? Because people will view libertarians a certain way, and I've done that myself. I've stereotyped libertarians in the same way that I can stereotype Democrats into two categories and Republicans into two categories. But when I do it, then I go out and I meet libertarians and they throw me for a loop because this is not a one-size-fits-all party any more than the Democrats and the Republicans in their ranks are. So being a libertarian doesn't mean you follow a very narrow set of rules.
That's true. There is, as my friend Tom Laurent, who was at one point the chair of the Oklahoma Libertarian Party, as I was a number of years ago, once said, if you get two libertarians in a room discussing an issue, you'll get at least three opinions. As far as...
Okay, wait. What did he mean by that?
Well, we
one of them's going to change their mind halfway through the argument or debate both sides of the issue.
Quite possibly. Sometimes it can be difficult to tell which side the devil's advocate is on. So the libertarian arguments can be wide-ranging and rambling and go in directions that nobody, even the participants, don't expect. So,
and actually, yeah, now that you mention that, I know I have had discussions with libertarians, which is why, frankly, I love the energy and the lack of, I guess, pretension of the Libertarian Party. Although, you know, a lot of libertarians will say, well, we're better than anybody, just like everyone will do on a bad day. But I have had discussions with libertarians where I could argue one side of an issue, and then if I flipped to them, I felt like maybe they flipped to the other side in order to just keep, maybe to keep the discussion going. I don't know how that works, but, you know.
Well, one of the things about libertarianism is that it's all about individual liberty and individuals. It's, you know, a campaign slogan that I have been using is, I believe in you. You have all these other people who believe in all of these different ideologies or their party platform, For me, it starts with the individual. Each and every person has their experiences and their knowledge and their skills and abilities that makes them valuable. So for you to have a different opinion from me, I may disagree with that opinion, but that doesn't mean that I can say, because you believe that, you have less value than I do just because you see things differently.
Because we're each taking it from our personal perspective of what we think our own individual rights should be and how far they should extend?
Sure, yeah. A lot of people who want to attack libertarianism want to paint this utopian picture and then tear it down. Well, we're not utopians. Human existence is always going to be messy and imperfect. We just want it to be messy and imperfect in such a way so that you have as much leeway to live your life the way that you want as can possibly be afforded.
Okay, and there's the key phrase. And again, I want to start by saying that I'm thrilled that the Libertarian Party is not just a party in Oklahoma, but an actual party that's on our ballots, all of our ballots. I think it's a huge step forward. I don't know what your here. I'm still screwing with this. This is not happening. Like, did my phone just fucking go out on me here? Luckily, we're on the radio, and I can say fuck. Apparently, I used to tell one of the old people who ran the radio station that I would confine my my shows to 3 fucks per show. And then I apologized 15 minutes into the show. Okay, why is this doing this? Dear Lord, it's making me mad. Okay, so here's the key phrase. I'm gonna forget about the live stream for a minute. So everybody tune in to the show on Red State Revolt. So here's the phrase: as much as is possible. When you say that, that's the devil is in the details kind of thing.
Sure,
that,
sure.
That we're all working with within all government, but specifically, if you were to say, I think these three branches, these three pieces of government should be done away with, where do you start? Because, again, let's go back to the cliche. I always hear EPA, kill the EPA. What are your thoughts on environmental restrictions? Not the EPA per se, but because this is Oklahoma and you're running a state race, in reality it's not fair to tie your views to the EPA to a state race. But what are your thoughts on environmental protections in Oklahoma? Because it's a big issue.
Well, one of the problems that we have is that we have these regulatory regimes, and what happens a lot of the time is regulatory capture, where people from the industry wind up being the regulators of that industry. And of course, they're going to do favors for their friends and try to take care of their – they become boosters and promoters rather than watchdogs. We've certainly seen that in Oklahoma and at the federal level, definitely.
Yeah. By boosters and promoters, do you mean that they're overstepping or that they're actually protecting the industries that they are assigned to regulate?
Oh, I think it's certainly the case that they protect their industry.
Okay.
And, you know, we certainly don't – I certainly don't like the idea of people who hate the industry that they're assigned to regulate, because that's, you know, that's the opposite side of the coin.
Right.
What we need with government is we need government to proceed without fear or favor. But one of the things that I think is a real problem with a lot of these regulatory regimes is that when they do find a problem, frequently the solution is fines that go to a government agency, and the people who are harmed are left out in the cold. So we need to move more towards a system that prioritizes making the people who are harmed whole again, to the best extent possible. And that's, you know, that's not something that happens overnight. A lot of these things that we libertarians want to do are things that are going to take a long time to really see a massive difference, because we're trying to change the thinking as much as anything else.
Okay, so yeah, taken from that perspective, that's, and again, it's my stereotypes are changing, and I'll tell you who actually first changed my stereotypes, probably Craig Dawkins, who is a libertarian and a proud one, very proud of it, and he believes, I guess, that the Libertarian Party should at least have a very strong foothold in Oklahoma politics, and I agree with him. But he changed my perspectives on that. So you're blowing up the stereotype, because I feel like you're, and I'm, this is going to shock people maybe, it's making sense to me, the approach. And the approach is that if and when you have the existence of government, let's say, as our example, the environmental protections, let me look here, we're about to go to break. Okay, 1 minute to break. The environmental protections, that you're saying that the guidelines of the protections should be that a government body's job is still to protect the individual's rights.
Yes.
The people who own land, the people who own whatever it may be, the air, the water, those are still individual rights that are being protected.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. See, that's that, and it makes sense. It makes perfect sense to me. Because I've heard the other extreme. I've heard the extreme that, well, we'll just eliminate the EPA because they're bad. And I would be the first to agree that they overstep. So we're going to go to a break. During the break, I'm going to see if I can get the live stream going again. Maybe I fixed it, maybe I didn't. We'll find out. This is Red State Revolt. Mark Falk with Chris Powell will be back in 2 minutes. Thanks for tuning in.
Ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing? More joy and less judgment? You're not alone. Come to the living room. A place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Years ago, some fishermen off the coast of Italy discovered some pottery along with fish in their nets. Divers were called out and discovered an ancient Roman ship whose galley, or caboose, a nautical term for kitchen, was extremely intact. Some of the food uncovered on board was pickled fish, wine, oil, and grain used to make the ship's biscuits, otherwise known as dandy funks. It is thought the 2,000-year-old boat was probably on its way to Spain when it sunk and was covered by layers of mud, baggy wrinkles and all. Baggy wrinkles are another name for the ship's ropes. The mud protected the ship from wear, explaining why the leftover food on board was still in such good condition. We land lubbers may not be familiar with leftovers on the sea, but we are familiar with leftovers in our kitchen. It's Margin Neighbor. I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Words.
We are back on Red State Revolt. I'm your host, Mark Falk. Apparently, Facebook has banned our live streaming or something, because no matter what I do, I'm coming up with a black screen when I try to live stream. So I'm going to post on my page the link to the radio show. Go ahead and go to that. And we were talking before the break about really what is still the kind of the mantra. You gave me that quote. It's the old quote of where one person's rights begin and the other one end.
My right to swing my fist ends at the tip of your nose.
And then you followed up and said, well, it actually begins considerably before that. What did you mean by that?
Well, I don't have the right to threaten physical violence any more than I have the right to actually carry it out in order to coerce you to do whatever it is that I want you to do.
Okay. And I guess that means then it also, as we were discussing before the break and also during the break as well, that also extends to your rights to your property. You know, the manufacturing plant next door can't pollute the water that flows by your land or the air or the ground or seeping into even underneath. So those are, it's still an individual rights thing, though.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. See, that actually makes a lot of sense from a perspective where I felt as if I had a difference of opinion with a lot of libertarians. The idea that we don't need these restrictions or these safeguards. You're saying we do, but that they should always apply to this test of, well, here's the right of the corporation, but here's my right to be safe in my environment.
Right. You don't, a corporation or anybody, an individual doesn't have a right to dump toxins in the river, and a corporation is a group of individuals working together, and they don't get extra rights because of that. So they don't have a right to dump toxins in the river either.
Okay. All right. Let's go into some different areas. If you were elected, actually, let's do this in two parts because we've got the whole show today. This is nice to have you for a whole hour. Let's go into two parts. First of all, talk about your other two opponents in the Libertarian Party. Give us their names. I don't care whether you want to talk crap on them or just drop their names in passing and speak highly, whatever. But regardless of that, how do you differentiate yourselves from them? So first, what makes you the right libertarian to get in the general election? And then secondly, we'll probably do this in another segment, what makes you the right candidate for government in the general election once you're in there? So we'll start with question A.
Well, the other two gentlemen that are in the race for the Libertarian nomination are Joseph Maldonado, who is known as Joe Exotic and has the safari park down in Winnewood, and Rex Lawhorn, who is in a family business up in Tulsa. As far as what makes me different from them, I've been involved with the Oklahoma Libertarian Party since 2000. I served a term as the vice chairman and then a term as chairman. I run for office and done very well for a Libertarian candidate. Last year, I ran for Oklahoma County Clerk and got 89,000 votes. To put that in context, Gary Johnson, our presidential candidate, got 83,500 some odd votes statewide.
And you were the first libertarian that I voted for in an election.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your vote.
You're very welcome. And I could say that depending on who a Democrat would have been, it's possible I would have still voted for you in that because I find your views to be very, they use the term radical for me a lot, and I hate it, but radical just means I don't believe we should destroy the planet, stuff like, you know, some radical shit like that. And I don't believe we should arrest everybody for no apparent reason. Just some, you know, basic radical ideas. But I find your views to have that same perspective, but you're measured in a lot of ways that helped calm my fears towards voting for a libertarian.
Well, one of the problems that I think that the Libertarian Party has had in a lot of cases is this appearance that we are really out there. And the fact is that we're not. Now, we may certainly take stands from time to time that some people may find to be a little bit extreme. But as far as who we are as individuals, we're just people. There's no hippie commune anywhere. There's no.
That's the Democrats.
There's no militia outpost that I'm aware of. Maybe I just haven't been invited. But we're just regular folks who believe in individual liberty for everybody, and that's what we're trying to promote. We're for people over politics. We're for limiting government to increase freedom. So that's who we are.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the other two candidates. You said that you, first of all, you have experience. You have run mm-hmm. for office. Mm-hmm. Have you been in the party longer than, or involved with the party longer than they both have?
Well, Joe is.
It wasn't a slash, you know, quote unquote approved party until recently, but the Libertarian Party has existed for a long time in Oklahoma.
We've been around as a constant organization since 1972.
Wow.
Okay. But as far as the other two candidates, Joe, I think, is very much a more recent joiner. He ran for president last year. As an independent, he was on the Colorado ballot with 20 other people and was a write-in candidate in many other states. Rex has been involved a little bit longer, and I think he has identified as a libertarian for a very long time. And it shows in his depth of knowledge of the issues.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that both of you came off very well spoken in the debates last week that I was at. And as I said before we came onto the show, Joe Exotic, if you stripped away his occasional outburst about, you know, his rampant drug use and the various that he likes to throw out there as his body of life experience, which frankly, when I go out and I used to go out and speak about Larry Yarbrough, who we were trying to get out of prison, who was a life without parole, nonviolent drug mm-hmm. offender, and it looked like that was actually a setup. But I had no problem saying that when I was young, I did things worse than what Larry was probably convicted of. And so I don't see that as a problem. Joe, the problem might have been that you wondered if he was still doing it at that moment, not that this was in his distant past. But you strip all that away, and even his positions sounded more, made more sense than some of the extreme Republican positions that were espoused that evening.
Well, I don't think anybody would say, listening to Joe for an extended period of time, that no, he's actually a Democrat, or no, he's actually a Republican.
Right.
So, and I, you know, I for one am not interested in trying to run people off.
Right.
We've had some of that with some individuals who are mostly they're concerned with white nationalists and people of that ilk trying to infiltrate and take over. I haven't seen any evidence of that here. They've got a little bit of problem. They're trying to they got a little bit of a brush fire with that in Florida that they're trying to put out. But I have not seen that here, and I don't think anybody here has a real issue with if some sort of Richard Spencer's type comes along saying, you know, you're more than welcome to be here, but those ideas are not what we're about.
Right. Right.
I don't know how welcome they would be, but we would definitely say those ideas are not what we're about.
Right. And the thing about it is that if your party were the size of the Democrat or the Republican Party in the number of registered voters, mm-hmm. it would be different because within the Democratic Party, I won't, but I could easily name some people that are borderline unhinged. But there's so many of us that it's easier for them to kind of be marginalized and sidelined mm-hmm. because you have – what do you guys have, 7,000-something voters?
There are about little over 4,600 registered libertarians right now.
Okay, yeah, and I believe that within the ranks of the independents, there are a lot more probably people who would call themselves libertarians.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
And within the ranks of the Democratic Party, there are some people who lean libertarian, and possibly also the Republican Party.
There are people all across the political spectrum who have libertarian leanings. And if we are able to, I really want to take advantage of this particular cycle. That's the main reason why I'm running, to expand the party and bring in a lot of these people, give them something to say, this is a viable growing concern,
yeah,
and something I can get on board with. And I think if we can sell that, if we can present that perception, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to jump on board.
Yeah. Okay. You and Rex, how would you differentiate yourself with him on the issues? Because that's one thing, again, within the Democratic and the Republican Party. On the Democratic Party, when you had Connie Johnson, Drew Edmondson, and Scott Inman all sitting up there, I don't know, you know, they always somehow had Drew in the middle because that was the way it was. It was Scott was always everybody went, there's Scott on the right, there's Drew in the middle, there's Connie on the left. It's a little harder for Drew and Connie to separate each other, you know, but I'm starting to see that there is space between them. They have differences on their positions. So looks like we're down to 30 seconds. When we come back, I want to talk about how within the Libertarian Party, how do you differentiate yourself from Rex? And then from there, we'll go into, let's say you make it through this cycle and you get to the general. How then do you begin to sway enough people to be viable at the general election? So this is Red State Revolt. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
It's the Fitness Minute with fitness expert Annette Hammond.
To lose weight, we know that each day we need to burn more calories than we take in through eating, and exercise burns more calories. According to Discovery Health, a 150-pound person will burn about 60 calories while taking a one-hour nap. 1 hour of sitting and watching television burns about the same. But if that 150-pound person takes a one-hour brisk walk, then say goodbye to more than 250 calories. Cardio exercise like running, biking, swimming, and brisk walking are the best modes of exercise to burn the highest amount of calories and will get the endorphins flowing in your body. Those feel-good neurotransmitters boost your mood naturally. So use exercise to burn calories, lose weight, and to feel good. I'm Annette Hammond. To hear other fitness and weight loss tips, visit our website at AnnetteHammond.com.
It's words you never heard.
Mike McMillan from Ontario, Canada, was driving to a meeting when he saw what looked like a can of cola moving around on the side of the road. Curious, he stopped to investigate and discovered a skunk had gotten its head stuck in a soda can. After a moment of abulia, or indecision, he decided to try and save the potentially woofy animal. Woofy is another word for smelly. He grabbed the can and engaged in dang swaying, or a cooperative tug of war with the skunk, all the while hoping he wouldn't get sprayed. Finally, the skunk managed to pop its head out of the can and land safely on the ground. After a brief stare down, the skunk turned and ran into the woods. What's another word for running away in fright? Funkify.
It's words you never heard.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Word.
Say on the air. And we are back on Red State Revolt. I do wish we were live streaming because we always say things during the live stream in between, during the breaks, that give people a glimpse behind the scenes a little bit, but that's okay. You guys are going to have to use your imagination. Just know that we dismantled all of society during the last 2 minutes and you missed it. Sorry, guys. So we were talking about you and Rex, and we talked a little bit about it during the break. As I said, and I said this during the break, I don't mean this to be dismissive of Joe Exotic. I think he's a fascinating person, and frankly, in the presidential election, there are people who might say he might have been less harmful than who we elected.
I'm sure there are a lot of
people. Yeah, because at least his heart's in the right place, and he has one. So there's that, too. You know, if I have any Donald Trump fans out there, why the fuck are you listening to my show? I'd just like to say that. But if you are, I will not apologize for that. But I think that the Joe, even within the Republic or the Libertarian Party, would be considered a long shot candidate. We'll just leave that at that. But now that leaves you and Rex. How do you create that space between you and him that Connie's now trying to do with Edmondson and the Republican candidates are trying to do with each other? How do you tell Libertarian voters first, hey, well, I'm the person who can not just on the issues, but also have the best chance come November?
Well, our positions are going to be pretty similar. There's a little bit of difference on some of the focus. I've talked more about cutting some of the incentives and credits and subsidies, a lot more of the crony capitalism. Rex has this vision of expanding a lot of our public education system in some interesting ways that I certainly am not interested in saying anything bad about any of those ideas, but it's something that is not going to happen overnight. But of course, if you can paint that picture and get people to buy into it, then that can be successful. We have, you know, we do have a little bit different style in how we reach out to people and how we talk about issues. But, you know, we're both solid libertarians. One of the things that I am personally committed to is that I don't want to say bad things about other people in my party.
Yeah.
Unless it's pretty clear that they're not really a libertarian.
Right.
I don't want to, you know, there's things that could be said about Joe if somebody wanted to.
Sure.
I'm sure if I were to really try to go after some bad things to say about Rex that I can find stuff to say. But I don't think that helps the party. We're trying to get bigger. We're trying to sell ourselves to the public. And that's not productive. It's a little bit like Reagan's 11th commandment about Republicans. And certainly that has gone by the wayside.
Right.
As they all say terrible things about each other.
Well, and part of that may be that when you become the party in power, then the struggle becomes who has the power of the party.
Certainly.
Somebody should write that down. That's, you know, but that's right. You guys are looking to gain power as a party, so it doesn't behoove you to right now start dividing up and picking sides, you know, when you're, as you said, 40-something hundred people registered. The last thing you need to do is go, well, you take that 1,000, I'll take this 15, we'll all go start two more parties with that, because you're trying to grow. And also, your campaign style as a libertarian can be, and I'm assuming, is different than both other parties. You can actually reach out to your voters. You have a few enough voters that you can get a message of some type, whether it's by email, social media, you know, forums. But you have that potential with that few of voters in your party to actually reach all those voters with your message.
Well, that's, you know, it's certainly a smaller list, but we also want to reach out beyond that. We want to, there's 320,000 independents, registered independents in this state, and we want to reach out to those people. We want to reach out to those Republicans and Democrats who are not really Republicans and Democrats, but are really libertarians.
Right. So as you're vying for the vote within your party to get your nomination, you're also vying as a libertarian to spread the message of the Libertarian Party statewide.
And we have to get 2.5% to stay on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Well, if there's 5,000 libertarians, we're going to need 20,000 other folks to at least, at a minimum, to come along as well. And really, to be safe, we probably need more like 30 or 35,000.
Really? To keep you on the ballot?
Just to stay in the game.
Right.
So we, we can't really wait until July to start reaching out beyond our own ranks.
Right. Yeah. This year, because Fallon turns out, we started early. We have a full year and plus back when people started talking about running in the election. It's been going on for a while. But between the primary and the general, you suddenly have a shortened playing field and a shorter time period. So you can't at that point say, well, now I've got those 4,000 votes. Let me go out and get the other, at least, as you said, 20,000 votes that you need and maybe more. I mean, so how do you do that? How do you do that?
Well, any time that we can get ourselves before the public at these debates and forums and, getting things in the paper when we can, coming on Red State Radio with Mark Falk, any of those things that we can do to let people know that we exist is a positive. Now, because you have all these political people there, I'm sure there are a lot of political people who are listening to this show right now.
Right.
And they're immersed in that political environment and connected, and they know all about the three of us libertarians and all the other candidates. But the vast majority of people have better things to do with their time.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Because I don't, obviously. But...
Well, that's me too.
I know. But to what you're saying, though, at the same time, even the Democrats have been hyper-focused on the Democrats. So we're all busy with Edmondson in one camp and Connie on the other camp and the undecideds in the middle and the independents, because we do allow them to vote in our primaries. We're all vying for them. But then when Inman dropped out, now we're down to two. So now there's this demographic that might have been Inman supporters that are going, well, what do I do? So I think for me to talk to someone like you and have people go, okay, you guys are not Martians. You don't. As you said, the extremism that even myself have attributed to the Libertarian Party can exist, but it clearly doesn't necessarily exist. Talking to you and talking to Craig and talking to, some of the people, Tina, who I know well, a lot of the leaders of the Libertarian Party are very responsible people who the Democratic Party would welcome as a candidate, but they might hold it against you as a libertarian. So it does become your message, because who knows who makes it into the general election on the Republican side or the Democratic side. But regardless, there's going to be entire camps that are unhappy with that result. And that's an opportunity for your party.
Sure, sure. I do want to say that I don't think it's very helpful for the Democratic Party and thus for the choices in the general election for Inman to have dropped out. I understand the circumstances were such that he was really didn't have a lot of choice in the matter at that point, but he did represent a group within the Democratic Party that really wasn't Connie's group or Drew's group.
Yeah.
So I think that's that reduction of choice is bad for Democrats, just as if the Libertarians weren't on the ballot, that lack of choice would be bad for the entire electorate.
Yeah, yeah. And as I was saying earlier, I think that in some ways, and I had the same thing where I have spoken to the two Libertarian groups before, because while they might completely disagree with me on some issues, they're like, oh, okay, you get it on drug reform. You get so we had things in common, and so does Connie. But she gets in or she doesn't get in. Some people said that she's a long shot. If she doesn't get in, and I personally am a fan of Connie Johnson's, I think she's a good person, but I also understand she's a black woman in Oklahoma with very progressive ideas. Although we did just elect, by the way, and I didn't get to say this earlier, a woman in her 20s in a lesbian interracial marriage in Tulsa in a strongly Republican district to the legislature 2 days ago. So regardless of whether it's your perspective or Connie's perspective, it shows that Oklahoma is ready for something different.
Well, I was reading something by David Van Riskum at Sooner Politics about how the redistricting in after the 2010 census changed that district to a more winnable district for Democrats. And obviously the very narrow sliver of difference between the Democrat and the Republican is evidence that it is really close.
Yeah.
I was hopeful that my friend Steve Vincent out in District 45 would be able to do a little bit better. He and I both worked at Oklahoma City 911 together for many years. And Steve is we're not on the same ideological page on a lot of things, but Steve's a good guy.
Okay. Yeah, and honestly, Steve did close the gap in that district as well, so he did well. He just couldn't get over that hump. We're going to be right back, and in the last segment, I want to talk about the issues, and that'll give people a chance to vote.
A few years ago, some fishermen off the coast of Italy discovered some pottery along with fish in their nets. Divers were called out and discovered an ancient Roman ship whose galley, or caboose, a nautical term for kitchen, was extremely intact. Some of the food uncovered on board was pickled fish, wine, oil, and grain used to make the ship's biscuits, otherwise known as dandy funks. It is thought the 2,000-year-old boat was probably on its way to Spain when it sunk and was covered by layers of mud, baggy wrinkles and all. Baggy wrinkles are another name for the ship's ropes. The mud protected the ship from wear, explaining why the leftover food on board was still in such good condition. We land lovers may not be familiar with leftovers on the sea, but we are familiar with leftovers in our kitchen.
It's Margin Neighbor.
I'm Carolyn Davidson, and you can have fun challenging your words you never heard vocabulary with my free app, Too Funny for Word.
Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com.
And we are back on Red State Revolt. I'm your host, Mark Falk, and I have Chris Powell, gubernatorial candidate for the Libertarian Party in Oklahoma, as my guest. And we've been talking about a lot of different things. We talked about logistics of the party, how you're trying to spread your message to other factions, which would include an incredibly large independent base in Oklahoma. And I think this trend is true nationally. But in Oklahoma, it seems to be even more pronounced. So you have a whole lot of either-or people that you get to appeal to in the general election. So, you know, we've got about 11 or 12 minutes left. How do you pitch them based on the issues? What can you say that for instance, will make a Bernie-crat lean your direction? Or maybe it's a Hillary, you know. I don't want to say Hillary bot, but because that sounds derogatory. It sounds like Bernie bro, and I think both are inaccurate, you know. But how do you appeal to people from a philosophical or issue-based perspective?
Well, some of the issues that I like to talk about are criminal justice reform. The popular phrase that I would agree with is that we are putting people in prison that we're mad at instead of reserving it just for people that we're afraid of.
Yeah.
We do have a very high incarceration rate, second in the nation with the largest incarceration rate in the world. So we need to obviously address that and look at, you know, really take a serious look at who shouldn't be in what is essentially the higher education system of the criminal world.
Yeah.
Who we can divert from that into hopefully becoming a productive citizen.
There are people now who would say that we're afraid of people in the drug realm. And that's still a thing. We still create fear-mongering. We talked a little bit before the show started about the opioid thing that's in the news right now. It's a big thing. And it's a real thing. But it also reeks of to me, of fear-mongering, of a way to ramp up and say, no, we can't begin to treat drugs as a mental illness and a drug treatment issue. We have to lock these people up.
Well, it's certainly the case with opioids, as with anything else, that whatever problem we may have with those substances, we cannot arrest our way out of it. That doesn't work. We know from previous drug scares that it ruins lives more than it fixes lives.
Yeah. And you can't put enough people in prison
exactly
to get rid of it unless you want to put all of our money into prisons.
There's always somebody else who is willing to do what it takes to serve that black market, because the price, the profit margins increase. It's like what Milton Friedman said, that if you look at it from an economic perspective, the role of government in drug prohibition is to keep the cartels in business.
Yeah. So would you then, you know, as part of the libertarian smaller government mantra, would that include the idea that money spent on drug treatment and mental health is better spent than money spent on incarcerating everybody who has a drug problem?
Well, it's cheaper.
Yeah.
And it leads to more productive citizens than other than people who go into the prison system as a drug user and come out as a career criminal.
Yeah.
So it keeps us safer in that way. And it's, you know, there's the moral question of whether you should lock somebody up because they used a substance on themselves.
Right.
Does the state own your body or do you?
Yeah. And yet alcohol and tobacco are
certainly,
you know, I have a drink and smoke a cigarette, and we are just thrilled to death about that, you know.
So. And, you know, obviously the deaths from opioids are a concern. We haven't had it as bad here as some other parts of the country. But if you go, you can go all the way back to alcohol prohibition. The federal government actually poisoned alcohol and wound up blinding and killing thousands of people as part of that effort to enforce drug prohibition. And it did not stop the alcohol use. So
that's hurting my head. This is when you needed the visual of the lichen, because we think alcohol is dangerous, so we'll poison it, which will kill people because we don't want you to drink.
Well, the assumption was that if it's poisoned and it kills some people, then nobody else will use it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work.
Paraquat on marijuana was a similar program back in the 70s where they were spraying crops with, this horrible shit and people were getting sick. But it wasn't like we were buying, I say we, because yes, I smoked weed back in the day. And it wasn't like we were buying it and had a warning label on the side. This bag that you bought has we don't know,
That's another problem with illegality, is that users don't know what they're getting. They don't know the dosage. They don't know what else has been put in there.
Right.
Legal products do not have those issues. One of the things that to me is interesting to me about alcohol is that the most potent stuff you can get down at Byron's liquor warehouse is like Everclear.
Right.
And just friendly advice, don't drink anything you can run your car on. But people don't go in and buy all the Everclear.
Right.
They buy stuff that is a lot less potent.
In line with their own personal tolerance, right, or whatever.
Prohibition incentivizes putting the most potency in the smallest package possible. It drives you towards something that will come as close to killing you as you can get without actually doing it. Of course, for different people, it does.
Right. And opioids, I'm now reading as I'm researching it, that even when they're now talking about heroin overdoses, one of the reasons that is increased is because when they do toxicology reports on the people who have died, which is a horrible thing, they're finding out that they're putting opioids into heroin because it's stronger and cheaper. So people who are buying heroin used to getting X amount of strength within a realm of, give or take, whatever. Suddenly they're taking something that isn't just heroin, it's partial heroin, but they've added all this other horrible and much stronger stuff to it, and they overdose and die. So, again, that comes to a regulatory thing. And I want to move on really quickly to some budget issues while we've got about 5 minutes left. But if we did that, as a libertarian, you are okay with the idea that we would regulate and control these, because based on what I actually learned earlier that you put so well, that's still a protection of individual rights.
Well,
the right to not be poisoned by the medication that you get off a shelf.
If you have a substance, a legal substance for sale, and you have it labeled with what's supposed to be in there, and it's something else that's in there, and you're harmed by it, well, that's fraud.
Yeah.
And we're against use of force or use of fraud to coerce you.
And then you didn't make that decision as a free and independent and free will person.
Exactly.
Because they gave you something against your knowledge and basically against your will.
Exactly.
Okay. That's, again. Okay, people, I want everybody who listened to the show today, go out and share this one. It'll be up probably tonight as a podcast, and get it out there, because this makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad that we had you back on, because we had that short time span before and I didn't feel like we were able to cover things. So next thing, while we got a couple of minutes, what about the budget? In Oklahoma, we're cutting everything. There's one side, OCPA, and some of those people who still say just less and less and less and less and less and less taxes. There's people on the other side who say dump more taxes on the poor, make everything a regressive tax, and those people that are earning minimum wage, they can handle a gasoline tax or whatever. And then there's us in the middle who, and I think it's a pretty damn big group these days, who say, well, can we do acknowledge that we need a tax base to do those vital services, but we're giving tax breaks to the wrong people. Where do you fall in on that, and how would you as a governor reconfigure and reevaluate our tax revenue situation?
Well, I'm not a big fan of tax hikes, just generally speaking, but I am a big fan of government treating people equally, equality before the law. Whatever the gross production tax rate should be, and in fact, whatever energy production tax rate there should be, whatever number we can find consensus with, in my view, it ought to be that number from day one forward.
Across the board.
Yeah. If it doesn't make economic sense to drill a well or put up a wind farm or anything or put up solar panels, except if there's a tax incentive to do so, then it really doesn't make sense to do it.
Right. And we have vertical drillers now paying 7% and horizontal drillers paying 2%.
That's clear inequality before the law.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to, just hardline opposed to having the GPT increased, but I am opposed to having it increased or decreased or moved in any way that doesn't get us closer to a more equal situation.
Right.
For everybody on, again, all kinds of energy. The other thing that we've had all of these people in the legislature who have been talking about cut this, cut that, cut the other, but we haven't seen a lot of specific proposals as to what to cut. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got an incentive evaluation commission that has $450 million in different programs that are incentives of one kind or another. You can't tell me that every last bit of that is essential. And that's not counting the ones that don't have a specific dollar amount attached.
Right, right. Okay.
We can, and equality before the law, you shouldn't be giving subsidies to this group and tax credits to that group. You should be treating everybody equally.
Okay. We're down to about 30 seconds. How can people get a hold of you and find out more about your campaign?
Well, I'm on Facebook, Chris Powell for Governor, on Twitter, Chris Powell for Governor, and the website is www.powellforgovernor.com. It's all pretty consistent across the board there. And, go Google me up and see what you can like.
All right. Thank you for coming on. This is Red State Revolt. We will have this up as a podcast very quickly. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.